I preached here, I don't know, a year or two ago. I don't do it very often, but here I am. If you recall, maybe you don't, instead of starting with a prayer, I always start with a acapella song that serves as my prayer. Change my heart, oh God, make it ever true. Change my heart, oh God, may I be like you. You are the This is what I pray. Change my heart, oh God. Make it ever true. Change my heart, oh God. May I be like you. So I'm doing your sermon today. I've done them before, especially when I used to be a pastor for a time, a long while ago. What I remember this time is how difficult it is sometimes to come up with a title for the message. You would think that would be simple or quick, but believe me, sometimes it's not. So in an effort to come up with the words that I wanted to communicate through a title, I took one word, virtuous, and I Googled it. I thought it might spark some ideas anyway. And what I found is it says, virtuous woman is defined as one who could be trusted, one who is noble, righteous and capable, a woman of strength, moral goodness, and resolution. And even in Proverbs 31:30, it tells us that a woman who fears the Lord shall be praised. I was so happy to find these descriptors, and I'm in full agreement with them. But what I saw next kind of surprised me. There was a prompt on the screen, and it says, who are virtuous women in the Bible? And I know you can't trust everything that comes up on the internet search, and you have to follow up, but I was intrigued, so I clicked it. And I was fully expecting to find my hero, Hannah, somewhere on the top of the list, you know, not maybe number one, but somewhere at the top. After all, she was the mother of Samuel, one of the greatest prophets of the Old Testament. He was one of the most iconic prophets, actually. She has to be there, right? Guess what? Her name was not near the top. It really wasn't even on the list. These obviously uninformed Google people don't know what they're talking about. Now, they listed Eve, Sarah, Hagar, Deborah, Jael. Who is that? I don't even know who that is. I have to look it up. Miriam, Tamar, and Rahab. Are they for real? Do they even have a Bible? Here's a question. And I looked at similar lists because this really caught me off guard. They had the same people. No Hannah. Now, I'm not saying that I disagree about these other gals. They did all right, too. But I am here today to introduce you to a truly virtuous female hero of the Bible, whose scholars seemed to have continuously overlooked. Let's look at a snippet of her life and examine the qualities together, shall we? Now that we've heard the scripture read and are reminded of the people in the story, let's take a closer look at their family. Again, Elkanah was the patriarch of the family. He had two wives, Peninnah and Hannah. The first thing we are told is that Peninnah has given birth to upwards of 10 sons, while Hannah had no children. And Elkanah was a man of faith and a good husband. The scripture tells us that he traveled to the city of Shiloh to worship at the temple, and he would offer annual sacrifices before God. At those times, Elkanah gave portions to each wife and the children. This was all well and good. In verse 4, there's something more revealed to us. We learn that Elkanah gave a portion of the sacrifices to Peninnah and the 10 sons, but then the word tells us that he gave a double portion to Hannah. Why? Because he loved her. Even though, what does it say? The Lord had closed her womb. Now, we've heard stories about similar situations like this one before in the Bible. Remember how Jesus healed different individuals who were blind or deaf or unable to walk for their whole lives until that very day when Jesus miraculously healed them? Why? Well, it appears that the situation occurring in that person's life was there for a purpose, God's own purpose. Will we ever understand how God's will actually operates in human lives? Nope. Don't even try. I don't think that we'll ever understand until we get up there and we have a millennium or eternity to ask him 5,000 questions. I've been writing mine down to get ready because I have a lot of questions about, I think things should have went and they didn't go that way. So I'm making a list. It's important that we note the accusatory words of people, Old Testament, Pharisees, Sadducees, today's people, declaring that certain individuals' circumstances befell them because of their parents' past sins or some unknown generational sins that they're being presently punished for, I believe that's evil talk. That cannot be true. People still say crazy things. Don't believe that. Being told that you're by your whole community that your physical infirmity is somehow your fault or your family's fault, that would make someone feel terrible, rejected, hopeless. Well, this is how Hannah felt. Year after year, Hannah was unable to conceive a child. And it makes matters worse, Elkanah's other wife, Peninnah, with whom he had 10 sons, she would mercilessly mock and taunt Hannah about being infertile. Every year, after such times, Hannah wept. And she wouldn't eat. And she wouldn't drink anything. She would feel in utter despair. Her husband, Elkanah, loved her so, which probably made Peninnah really jealous. And he honored her with all that he did. Then Elkanah would continuously ask, "Hannah, why do you continue to weep? Why won't you eat? Why is your heart so sad? Am I not more to you than 10 sons? Am I not more to you than 10 sons? Really, dude?" Elkanah, could you truly have been any more clueless? Now maybe Elkanah was all that and a bag of chips, a bona fide hottie. I don't know. Maybe he knew he was on some level. But this really wasn't the time for vainglory. Women in this time period were considered second-class citizens at best. And in that culture, the primary thing that they were lauded for and expected to do was to produce male heirs so that the land, their ancestral lands, could be passed to them and all that other stuff. You know that stuff. But that's really important. So for a woman to be barren was like the worst of all fates. And if you recall, the scripture tells us that they believed that the Lord had closed Hannah's womb. Now concerning Elkanah, instead of saying these carnal, unthoughtful words to his miserable wife, as the head of the household, maybe he might have chosen to call out to God and pray for his wife. That might have been more useful, just saying. What happened next here is significant, though. After Elkanah said these things to his wife, notice Hannah did not respond to him at all. She did something else instead. The word tells us in verse 9 that after the two of them had eaten and drank at the temple in Shiloh, Hannah rose to her feet and presented herself to her husband. To God. What does that mean, presenting herself to God? Well, let's look further in the text. Take note that we were told that the priest Eli was seated beside the doorpost of the temple at this time. As Hannah was presenting herself to the Lord, she felt deeply depressed. She went into the holy place. She assumed a kneeling position, and she prayed. While she was praying, she bitterly wept. Can you remember a time when you prayed through tears like Hannah? I can. Maybe we were miles away from a loved one who was in a precarious situation, or you were at a loved one's bedside. You can imagine the level of Hannah's despair. We are all human, we've been through it. During this prayer, she made a specific petition to God for a child, and in it, she promised to give the child back to to God, plus a few other things. She had to be truly desperate to offer to give her child back. I invite you to read the short passage and unearth its many treasures on your own. We love to preach to you, but we love for you to read the Bible on your own too. Here, I want to bring your attention to the fervor of Hannah's prayer and the response that she received when she was praying. Verse 12 tells us that the priest Eli was standing nearby watching Hannah as she poured herself out in prayer on her knees. She was praying very hard, but no audible words were coming from her. And the priest couldn't hear anything, so he concluded, obviously, she's drunk. Really, dude? What's with the dudes? Okay, sorry. Eli then proceeded to interrupt her deep prayer and accused her. Can you imagine? Where was his priestly discernment at that moment? He accused her of coming to the temple in a drunk condition. And Hannah had to stop praying. And she answered him, saying that she had drank no wine or no strong drink. And she told her that she was merely deeply troubled and pouring out her soul before God. And he was watching the whole time. And then she said, "Do not see me as some worthless woman." Now, that's virtuous to me because I don't think I would have been that nice personally, but she's virtuous. The fortitude it must have taken for her to even stand up for herself to the priests was formidable. But why did she have to? The priest in this situation was dead wrong. As you can see, spouses and even clergy members can really mess up sometimes. None of us are God, we're only human. So remember to give us grace when it's needed. But in this case, I think Eli had more options available to him the way Elkanah did. First of all, they're sitting in the temple. How much thought would it have taken to say, God? I see something strange going on over here. Can you give me some insight so that I can address this situation before I go over here? Just a little prayer. Just ask. You're right there. Nope. He decided to speak out of his carnal vision and accuse her of being in drunk. So that didn't work out. That's okay, we're gonna move on. But then upon hearing Hannah's testimony, he must have realized his error, and he said to her, "Go in peace. The God of Israel grant the petition that you have made to him." And Hannah replied, "Let your servant find favor in your sight." And then she returned to their place of residence while they were at Shiloh. She ate food, she drank, and afterwards she felt sad no longer. And after her fervent prayer, she was at peace, even regardless of the situation with Eli. The next thing that happened set all the wheels in motion. After returning from the temple at Shiloh, just like we've seen before, The scripture says that Elkanah knew his wife Hannah. Remember in the book of Genesis when Adam knew his wife Eve after the loss of Cain and Abel? In these instances, the Lord remembered both Hannah and Eve, who were deeply distressed. And in due time, Eve bore a third son named Seth. And in like manner, Hannah finally bore her first child, Samuel. Imagine her joy. After all those many years of weeping, Hannah would have the child that she wanted so desperately. Like Abraham and Sarah felt when Isaac was finally born after all the years that they had waited. She felt this child in her arms finally, just like they did. And when that happens, you never want to let them go. But we know this story. We always wish that we can hold on to our children forever, but that's not always the way things turn out. Through bitter tears, Hannah had called out to the Lord, and in that, she gave a bargaining prayer. She prayed that if God gave her a child, she would give the child back. So, give the child back means turn the child over to the temple priests once it was weaned. What a hard thing to promise. She just received her baby. But she's a virtuous, strong woman. Moral. No matter how it felt, she was grateful and she honored her promise. And when it was time, she traveled with her husband back to the temple and gave the child to Prince Eli. And it was raised in the temple. What a way for the story to end. Did Hannah have to return home weeping again because she was childless? If so, that would be so sad. And you know, I was reflecting on this because hardly anyone in my life has done a sermon on Hannah. But any parts that I've heard, I always thought that she went home childless. That was like the end of the story. Didn't everybody ever hear that she didn't return home childless? Maybe I'm the only one. But this is why I encourage you to read full chapters for yourself, because that's not what happened. You have to know for yourself what thus saith the Lord. Suffice it to say, Hannah did not cry from pain or anguish anymore. She and Elkanah continued to go every year to the temple and make their sacrifices. And she would take a robe that she made to Samuel and present it to him because he was being trained how to minister in the temple. So she was still able to visit Samuel there. That's joyous, at least. But that's not the happiest part of the story. There's one more thing. During one of their later visits to the temple, the priest Eli remembered them, Elkanah and his wife. And he chose to speak a special blessing over them, saying, "May the Lord repay you with children by this woman for the gift she made to the Lord." You see, the priest was also quite thankful that Samuel was in his ministry at the temple. And so he prayed this blessing. And guess what happened next? The Lord took note of Hannah once again, and as a result, in the coming days and months and years, Hannah bore 3 sons and a daughter, in addition to Samuel, and they were able to grow up in her home with her. Now that is what I call a happy ending. Through all those years and bitter weeping, her tears became full of joy and gratitude. And what I want to tell you most of all is that this truly virtuous woman handled herself faithfully throughout her whole time of trial. While in her times of anguish, she didn't lash out at Peninnah, who continually taunted her while she was barren. She did not respond to her husband's vain assertions, which didn't help, by the way. And she did not respond disrespectfully to priest Eli, who was clearly out of line to call her drunk. In all these instances, Hannah turned her face towards God. She told God through her prayers all of her troubles. She kneeled and she prayed at the temple, and she waited. She only interacted with God until her prayers were answered. These people in her life couldn't solve her problems. She knew that there was only one who could do that. This is a lesson that we can all learn from, wouldn't you say? And in the end, God gave her Samuel. But then, God is generous and abundant. He didn't just give her Samuel. He filled her house with children for her to raise with her husband, who loved her so. This is proof of the scripture in Psalm 30, 4 through 5, that says, "Weeping only lasts for a night, but rejoicing comes in the morning." Thanks be to God.